The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I wouldn't say that it's hindering anything or anything like that for me personally. I think they're going to, I think they drop back in these coverages. They're mixing up coverages and things like that. Cause obviously, you know, when you get down now, they're trying to make sure that you don't start coming back and scoring points. And it's something that we've done recently pretty well is, you know, when we get down and we come out of halftime and things like that, scoring points, getting after it. And so I wouldn't put it in that context of it being negative.
That's Caleb Williams talking at the podium as he does. He seemed, usually he's jovial. I felt like even after a loss or two, I felt like last week or 2 weeks ago, he was a bit more serious after the loss. And then this last week, I'm going to talk to Herb and see what he thought about that. It's Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you here, 670 The Score. You can download the Odyssey app, search for 670 The Score, and tap follow to receive alerts on all Bears coverage. And if you can't get enough, you can check out the Take the North podcast with my guy, Mark Grody, Dan Wiederer, breaking down the biggest storylines ahead of next Monday night's game against the Vikings. You can follow Take the North on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, hanging out with us right now on the Circuit Resort and Casino Hotline. Circuit Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. He covers the Bears for the bigs, and he's hanging out with me right now on 670 The Score. It is none other than Herb Howard. Herb, welcome to the show.
Gabe, what's happening, my dude? How you feeling?
Chilling, man. Listen, I got two big questions for you because I know you are in the thick of it. And the first is about Caleb Williams and his podium presence. It's something that, Herb, at the very beginning of the year, I thought, man, this guy's super happy. What is he going to do when he got 2-3-4 losses, you know, with the Bears? I really thought that. And then when the Bears started losing, he would still come to the podium and be happy and like talk about it like a learning experience. And I really felt good. It made me feel good as a Bears fan. Talk to me about these last couple of weeks, though, because I feel like the character's changed just a little bit.
I think it would be hard not to, man. You're talking about a kid who's had success at every level throughout his life, throughout his career. And now he's in the middle of a 7-game losing streak. Mm-hmm. That's something's got to be brand new for him. I think that he's done a pretty good job of just trying to maintain his demeanor, trying to be his authentic self. But he's very impressive early on, as you said. And I just think that as he's gone along, some of the frustration starts to set in, you know, some of the outside noise starts to creep in. Just some of the internal issues that they've been having start to take a toll on you. And I think you start to see just a little bit of that. I think he's still done a pretty good job of it. And I think it's been indicative of just how he is as a person, but also how he is as a player. And that is just to, you know, keep kind of chopping away at it, keep fighting, keep pushing. We've seen him, you know, show up late in games and bring them back when they've been down. And, you know, he doesn't seem like the type of the competitor nor a person who's going to quit and give up on anything like that. You are starting to see a little bit of a different demeanor from him at the podium. But for the most part, I think he's continued to be steady, continued to try and come out and answer questions. I do think that Coach Brown has kind of encouraged the entire team to not be as transparent as they have been throughout the season. So I think you've seen some of that from a lot of the guys over the past couple of weeks. But I think for the most part this year, his podium demeanor has matched the type of person that he is and the competitor that he's shown himself to be.
Certainly, and you mentioned it in the fourth quarter, the ultimate competitor for this Chicago Bears team. But how do you answer the puzzle when talking about that in the same breath? How do you answer the puzzling questions surrounding the first quarter inefficiencies of the Chicago Bears when you see something like that in the tail end. You can take the easy way out and say, oh, well, teams are playing cover two. Bears are trying to come back, so he's dinging and dunking. But he just looks so much different in the fourth quarter, even from a confidence standpoint.
Yeah, I can't explain it. I'm like Coach Brown on that one. Like, if I had the answer to that, I mean, I would have been proposed it, right? I don't know why they continue to start so slowly on offense specifically, but now you're starting to see the same thing defensively, especially, you know, last week in San Francisco. So I just don't know. I don't know.
Because Herb, it's interesting because, like, in the beginning of the season, you know, like, I know you're watching the games the way that I am. When people would say, like, oh, the Bears aren't putting up points, what's going on? I'm like, are you watching the game? Because they're moving the ball. First drive in the, you know, the beginning of the season, they were moving the ball. They would just end up with a you know, pre-snap penalty, or Cairo Santos would miss a field goal, or something like that with her. But they would get past the 50. Then it just seemed like in the last couple of games, like the three and outs just kind of magnified whatever was going on in that first quarter.
Yeah, like, I mean, earlier they would just have these drives that would stall for whatever reason. They take a bad sack. You know, getting the fact that knocks him out of field goal range, or there's a holding or a false start or something like that, and it kind of stalls a drive that was promising. And, you know, lately that hasn't seemed to be the case. I mean, Thomas Brown's first game or two as OC, right, they were putting up points. They were moving the ball. I think they ended up scoring their second touchdown of the season during one of those games in terms of the first quarter. So, I mean, you've seen a little bit of their ability to try and make something happen early in these games, especially you talk about first draft. I just don't understand it, right? There's a whole thing about, you know, the first 15 in the script and not having one and what that may or may not look like.
Right.
But I think that, you know, ultimately it's just about putting together four quarters of quality football, because even if it was in reverse, we'd have the same conversation about lack of halftime adjustments, lack of in-game adjustments, inability to finish down the stretch. And so, you know, it's kind of happening in reverse, but at the end of the day, you got to put together four quarters of good football, and that's just the bottom line. And so they haven't been able to put together a good first quarter, and then some games they'll find a way to put up, you know, 14 or 17 or whatever it is in the fourth quarter. And it's like, well, if you can do that then, why can't you do that earlier? But I think if it was the other way around, we would still have the same questions about their inability to play a complete football game.
We're talking to Herb Howard here on 670 The Score. It covers the Bears. For the Bigs, it's Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you. All right, let's just stay on Caleb for a second, because I'm curious about your evaluation process with him, right? There's been so many things, so many hurdles in the way of a true evaluation. But what have those variables been for you, the things that you're looking at that fit into your algorithm of quarterback evaluation, specifically for Caleb in this situation this year?
Yeah, I thought, you know, when he first got to the Bears, it was clear they were going to throw everything they could at him just to see, you know, what he could retain, what he could take from the classroom out onto the practice field. And I thought he did a pretty good job of that. And then they continued to bring more pressure on him and allow the defense to give him exotic looks even during training camp and, you know, bring different pressure packages. And I remember asking him, you know, just a little bit before the season, what aspect of his game did he think was furthest away from where he wanted it to be?
Great question.
And he was saying that it was his blitz recognition, his ability to, you know, identify these pressures and where they're coming from, and then find the answers both pre and post snap. And I think that over the course of the season, you've seen him get better at that part of it. Now he's still taking the sacks, which is the part of it that I don't understand. He hasn't improved at knowing when and when not to take certain sacks and when to, you know, live to fight for another down, because he has gotten better at recognizing the pressures. What looks might pressure come from? Where might this pressure actually be coming from in terms of which player may be coming? And then finding the answers in terms of not only finding the answers with protections, whether that's sliding, whether that's bringing guys into the formation, and then post-snap trying to find out where my answers are quickly. But he isn't getting that done. Once the ball is snapped, he's still back there. Once he's created enough protection and the O-line does a decent enough job on some snaps, he's still taking these critical sacks on, you know, late-game drives, third and fourth down situations, scoring opportunities where you get knocked out of field goal range. So that, to me, has been one of the biggest, you know, concerns with him throughout the season, is that he just hasn't improved, that aspect of his game, and just, you know, understanding when you can't take those types of sacks. Everything else I've been pretty impressed with. I think he's done a really good job of identifying what the defense is trying to do to him pre-snap. I think often enough he's found the answers post-snap. And we already knew he had the arm talent. He got the ability to throw on the run. And now we've gotten a chance to see how much of a competitor he is, how he doesn't shrink in the biggest moments. And so I've been impressed with him, you know, mostly. It's the one thing that continues to bug me is the sacks that he takes and when he takes them, because it's been happening throughout the entirety of the season. He talks about, you know, I can't take that sack there. I can't take that sack there. And then the following week you see a very similar sack.
Yeah, it seems as though, you know, obviously the collaboration between QB and offensive line when discussing sacks is one of those like blame game situations. When you look at that this year and looking at Caleb, you mentioned obviously holding the ball a little bit too long in certain situations, maybe fearful of an interception in others,
yeah.
Herb. When you're looking at, you know, reasons for, you know, why the Bears are so high in sacks allowed, if you're looking at it like a pie chart, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the only two components are offensive line and Caleb Williams. What is that percentage breakdown for you in terms of reasoning for sacks?
Well, respectfully, Gabe, I can't answer it that way. Like, it's just, there's just more people.
There's too much. Yeah, you're right.
It's the play calling. It's the game planning. You know, it's situational play calling. But absolutely, it's the offensive line. And absolutely, it's Caleb. And, you know, I would give a larger share of the blame and responsibility to the offensive line, but certainly the quarterback has his signature on it as well. You have to be first responsible for protecting yourself and identifying where you are most vulnerable on a given play. But then, two, you got to find the answers. And when all else fails, you got to get the ball out, or you got to bail out and make a move. You can't take that sack sitting there. Now, some of these sacks are immediate A-gap pressure. There's not a quarterback in the world that can do nothing about that. But some of these sacks are 4 and 5 and 6 seconds of just patting the ball. And it's like, you cannot do that. You absolutely cannot do that. And so, you know, there's plenty of responsibility to go around from the coaching staff to the offensive line and then also to the quarterback. I would say I would give the majority of it to the offensive line. That's their responsibility first. But also the quarterback has to understand, you know, certain game situations where you just, no matter what, you cannot take a sack here. And then the coach has got to do a better job of putting them in better situations.
Herb, when talking offensive line, when, you know, and other deficiencies of the Chicago Bears team in the present, not talking about coach, that's mm-hmm. a whole other thing. are we forgetting that Poles is still in rebuild mode? Because you hear a lot of people say, oh, well, look, with the roster construction, the present, but it's like, I don't think Poles thought that this is what his playoff challenging team is, or at its end state. I feel like he still had in his mind another offseason to go before he was putting his team in that position. Am I wrong by wording it that way?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I didn't think they were their window would open to be a legitimate contender until 2025. That being said, I think most people thought coming into this season that this roster was good enough to compete for a playoff spot, and for it to go this left this fast was a very disappointing thing. Now, did he leave some big holes on this roster? Sure, namely offensive line, defensive line. I think everybody knew that coming into the spring, but everybody was also excited and enamored about all the weapons that they were going to be able to surround Caleb with, and just excited about Caleb being here as well. And so, you know, I don't want to be there's been a lot of like revisionist history going on about, you know, how people felt coming into this season. They want to blame Ryan Poles for what the roster looks like. And it's like, I remember people talking about 9, 10, 11 wins this season. Like, you don't put 10, 11 wins on a team that you think their roster's poor, right? So you can't go back now that they've lost these games and say, well, the roster's poor. Well, either it was poor in May or something has gone wrong since then, right? So I think, you know, he certainly has some responsibility, but you go back and look at the totality of his tenure. He comes in the first year, he tears the thing down to his studs, right? They were going to lose, you know, 13, 14 games that year. That's the roster that they had once he got done tearing that thing down and trying to, you know, get them in a better cap situation and get them younger. And so that was the first year. Second year, they improved. They win 7 games. And then you just look back at a couple of those games last year, they blow a 20-point lead at home to Denver. They blow a 12-point lead on the road to Detroit with 3 or 4 minutes left in the game, right? And so you're looking at those, and that could be 2 more wins. So now you're looking at his record, and people are talking about, oh, it's 14-33 or whatever it is. And it's like, true, you are what your record says you are, but those weren't – those losses, and then you look at the losses this year, at least 4 of them for sure, were not due to a poorly constructed roster, right? You're talking about letting a 20-point lead get away from you. That's not because the roster's bad, right? You're talking about losing a 12-point lead in the last 3 minutes of a game. That's not because the roster's bad. We saw what happened in Washington. We saw what happened against Green Bay at home, Minnesota at home, Detroit. Like, you've seen how these things have gone. That's not because you have a poor roster. And I don't think many people thought the Bears had a poor roster coming in. They didn't have a complete roster. No, right? They weren't a legitimate contender, but they didn't have a poor roster. And so, you know, once they got themselves to the point where they're sitting there and you know, 4-8, 4-6, that's like, well, now we got to make a change at coach because we thought we had a better roster than the results are turning out to be.
We're talking to Herb Howard here on 670 The Score. It's Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you. And obviously, you just mentioned, you know, the coaching of the Chicago Bears. And nobody's been faced with a bigger challenge than Thomas Brown. And Herb, you and I know we've been in these situations before where boss man comes knocking on your door and he's like, hey,
sure,
can you take on this responsibility? And you're like, yes, I can. I will knock that. Yes, I can. I will say yes to this, and I'm gonna do it. Watch this. And so we've been there before, but it, you know, you've had an up close and personal seat to this. So what, in your mind, has been Thomas Brown's biggest challenge since taking over as interim head coach?
Yeah, I just think it was a difficult situation for anybody to be placed into when you talk about a team that, you know, had such aspirations, and then you find yourself in the middle of a lost season to try and, you know, get that thing back on the right track was a very, very tough task to ask. You're talking about somebody who was the passing game coordinator, you know, 3 weeks before he got the job, 18 days before he got the job. And so, you know, that's just a lot of different responsibility that has to, you know, be placed upon him in that time period. And so I just think it would be a difficult situation for anybody to come into. That being said, I mean, he was saying all the right things. You know, I was at Halas Harvard Day. The energy was right. The vibes were high. Like, you could feel all these things. All the players and coaches were saying the right things, you know, once he took over as interim head coach. But it did not translate into the game on Sunday. Obviously, they didn't start fast, and then it continued to get worse. And so he's in a really, really tough spot. Initially, I was of the mind that he should not have become the interim head coach.
Same.
Because if you were going to give him the responsibility of being offensive coordinator and ultimately place the most valuable commodity on the team in his hands, that being Caleb Williams, then just let him handle that, right? Don't give him any other responsibilities. Let's find out if he can do that part of it. Listening to Adam Hogue, who also, you know, works the Bears beat for CHGO, and he laid out a pretty good convincing argument for why it should have been him. And so he kind of changed my mind about that, but it didn't change the fact that you put so much more on his plate that maybe that wasn't the best way to go. Maybe you allow somebody else to oversee some of these decision-making things and some of these day-to-day things and all of these things that a head coach kind of has to oversee that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the development of this offense and development of Caleb. And during his 3 weeks as offensive coordinator, I thought the offense took a step forward, and then they clearly took a huge step back once he had all the responsibilities of being the head coach.
Of course, Herb, I agree with you 100%, and I said that on multiple shows where I said, man, I really wish somebody else would have taken on the responsibility because the number one priority is Caleb Williams and his continued growth. And clearly there's been something good brewing with the two of them. I think the bigger issue for me, the big red flag for me in that moment was the fact that there are no bold moves being made, right? It's like, you know, the bold move would have been to leave Thomas Brown there and to come out and tell everybody, hey, Caleb Williams is our priority. We're leaving him there and we're letting this guy, you know, because we're waving the white flag. We understand nothing's happening here, fellas. You know, like just taking that bold move and saying, hey, we're looking forward to next year too. Don't trip. Our gears are grinding. We're on the treadmill. We're looking around for everything. But that, like, the non-bold move was to take the guy who had been performing well at the podium for the last 2 weeks and say, oh, everybody really liked him? Hey, check this out. This is going to be our coach because we're going to fire Flus. It just seemed like the path of least resistance. And it just, again, and for Thomas Brown, too, again, like I mentioned in the beginning, we're all going to say yes. You know, why did he take it? Right. Because you say yes. It's an opportunity to be at head coach where that fraternity is very small.
It's one of 32. You don't turn that down.
Exactly. You never do that, right? You got to take it. He's going to be an offensive coordinator somewhere. Everyone has already seen what he did and obviously the person that he is. But so you got to take that thing. But again, it's just, I feel like it could have taken a bold move to say he wasn't going to step into that thing. But Chris, the other part of it too, right? It's like, you're asking these grown men that have been dealing with this turmoil for the last 5 or 6 weeks, or in Jalen Johnson's case, four or five years. And you're asking them to be like, hey, Thomas Brown's going to come in, so everybody's going to act right now. And he's like, no, that's too big of an ask for everyone involved in that situation.
Yeah, when you make a head coach decision in the middle of the season, if you have a competent special teams coordinator, I would always think that's the best way to go in terms of who should be the interim head coach. And I feel that way because the special teams coordinator is the only coach on the staff, the only coordinator for sure on the staff who has, you know, intimate knowledge of the entire roster. He's the only person on the staff that deals with offensive players, defensive players. They know the depth chart, who's second, who's third, because that impacts them. You know, when somebody else moves up to be the starter, that impacts them. So they are very, very aware of the entire roster in totality, and they've had conversations and coaching moments with all these players. Whereas I'd be hard-pressed to believe that Thomas Brown had a conversation with Noah Sewell at any point before he took over as head coach. Like, you know what I mean? There's just so much going on. He spent so much time in your room with your position group or whatever. And so, you know, when you have a guy like Coach Hightower, that just made the most sense to me. Or maybe a veteran coach like John Hoke could take over and do some of those things.
Herb, and you're not dividing the attention of your OC and DC in that situation too.
Yeah. I mean, that made a lot of sense to me too. But I do understand of taking a 5 week audition to look and see if Thomas Brown is capable.
They weren't going to hire him, Herb, and you know that. They weren't.
I don't know that.
Oh, well, I know that. I know they weren't going to hire Thomas Brown. I know they weren't going to do that because, again, you got to make a bold move. And Kevin Warren's not out here to hire Thomas Brown. Kevin Warren's here with an opportunity like this to not, you know, listen, everybody thought his stamp on the Bears was going to be the stadium. Now he gets the opportunity to bring in a head coach, pair it with the stadium, and hopefully bring a winner. And that's going to be the legacy of Kevin Warren. He certainly wants that to be it for him.
No, I feel you on that piece, but like, you don't think there's anything, there's no scenario where the Bears come out and they go 4-1 or they look really, really good in 3-2 stretch and no. Caleb really, really progresses and improves, and then Caleb is banging on the table saying, I need this guy to be with me on my journey. You don't think there's any scenario where they consider that?
Listen, if we're talking about, you know, if I was a millionaire and my wife let me cheat on her or something like that, you know what I'm saying? Like a beautiful scenario, then cool. Then we could talk about that. But then there's reality, right? Like my wife ain't going, right? Like I'm living here still in the shy, I ain't going nowhere. It's like we're speaking of realities. Bears aren't going 5-0. They're not going 4-1. Caleb ain't breaking out of something and going 350 with four tutties. And it's just we've seen that that's not going to happen. So that's what in my mind I'm like, yeah. There's no chance, like he has no chance to have that become a reality and that be a possibility. Because, and then I also genuinely think, like, they're not looking at him. They don't want to do that. They have the opportunity to go get something, you know, amazing in their mind, whatever they think that is, you know, outside of the organization. And I think they want to bring that in. But again, well, yeah, it's tough.
If that's true, then yeah, they absolutely made the wrong decision in promoting him to interim head coach. Yeah. Right? If they didn't want to look at him in that role, then they made a terrible decision in elevating him to interim head coach.
And I think they did. I think they did make a terrible decision. The same way they made a terrible decision to have a meeting at 9 a.m. the day after Thanksgiving to talk about Coach Eberflus's future.
That was bad business.
Bruh.
That was bad business.
Herb, if you and I are the owners of the Bears and we know what has been happening for the last couple of years, after the Thanksgiving game, you and I are kicking it on the porch or in the backyard and having around the fire pit, whatever it is, and we're talking about it that night. I don't care if it's Thanksgiving. I don't care. I ate the food already. Yeah. I ate the bread pudding already. I got to go outside and talk about this team. I'm not waiting till 9 in the morning. That's ridiculous. So, again, it doesn't surprise me that there's a bunch of bad moves that are being made, you know, surrounding all of this.
Yeah, no, that was terribly sloppy. It was rude. It was inconsiderate. It was disrespectful. They talk about priding themselves on doing things the right way and being respectful. And you don't send a man out there to have that press conference that morning when you're upstairs having a meeting about firing him. He was going to face questions in that press conference about his job security. And he did. And he's like, yeah, I'm pretty confident I'll be coaching in San Francisco next week. God. And they upstairs like, that's,
Mr. Eberflus, we'd like to see you upstairs.
Terrible, terrible look, right? And so if y'all hadn't decided, which I'm sure y'all had decided, at least Poles and Kevin Warren had decided, and then y'all had to meet with George and talk about it, and that's fine, just push the press conference back, right? In my time on the beat, I've seen them push press conferences back or up for any one of a number of reasons, right? So just push the thing back. Would that have, you know, raised red flags and said, oh, he's probably going to get fired? But yeah, probably, but you don't send him out there to do that. That's just...
That was
very, very inconsiderate and a bad thing to do, even though he deserved, like, it was clear he had to be fired. He earned that.
100%.
I think Flus is a decent enough dude. I've had some conversations with him. I really like him, but he had lost his right to be the head coach of the Chicago Bears going forward. So that was the right decision to make. But then the execution was just terrible. It was terrible.
Let me ask you this. So that's the last one I got for you before I get you out of here. With this looming decision for head coach of the Chicago Bears, how confident are you that they're going to get it right?
First of all,
wow, that's what I get. That's the answer I get first. I get a first of all.
Yeah, because I'll ask you a question first. I'm not very confident, but what I'm saying is there's a lot of reasons that go into that, right? So every year there's this coaching cycle of this hiring process, and they're like, well, who's going to get this head coach? Who's going to get it right? Who's going to get it wrong? The fact is, it's a very, very hard job, and very few people are good at it, like good enough at it, right? Yeah. And so there's 32 jobs, but there's probably only 10, 12 really good ones, and everybody else is just kind of like, I hope this works out, right? And, you know, the Bears haven't gotten this right for a long time, right? It's been turnover, 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 and they haven't gotten it right for whatever reason. So I'm not extremely confident. Now, you got Kevin Warren here and working with Ryan Poles, and, you know, depending on what story you believe, this may be Ryan Poles' first real hire for a head coach, and I've got Kevin Warren working with him. So maybe the process will be different. Maybe the outcome will be different. But I'm not extremely confident, number one, because the Bears haven't done it, and number two, it's because it's a very, very hard position to fill. Right. To pick the right candidate to, like, it's just not enough people are good at it. There's no point where you're going to have 32 good head coaches in the National Football League.
Yeah.
There aren't 32 men good enough to do it. So, you know, I think most of the good ones are secure in their jobs, and then you're trying to find who is another one. And that's a crapshoot. It's a crapshoot. This is a year with some solid candidates, and you talk about, you know, guys who have done it before, like Mike Vrabel, and you're talking about guys who have been, you know, hot prospects for a while, like Ben Johnson. And so I'm sure they'll perform their due diligence and they'll bring all those guys in, or they'll go see them and, you know, see what their plan is and what they think about Caleb and what type of defense they want to run relative to the Bears roster that they've built and all those types of things. I'm sure they'll turn over every stone. They should. But, you know, if I had to bet on it, I wouldn't put it higher than, you know, 30% that they hit a home run and you have a coach who's going to be here for the next 10, 15 years. I mean, if that's what we're talking about, like getting it right, if getting it right is you got a coach going to be here for the next 10, 15 years, I wouldn't put more than 30% chance on that.
Yeah. It seems like, right, to your point, it would be difficult for anyone to hit at that level. It's probably 30% for anybody. But hopefully, Ryan Poles, Kevin Warren, they are gambling men, and they're looking to hop the 7 so that we can land that big winner, baby. I love it, Herb. Great stuff as always, man. Enjoy talking to you tonight, man. Look forward to doing it again soon.
Okay, I appreciate you, man. Have a good one.
Always, Herb Howard. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at HerbHoward411. Covers the Bears for the Bigs. Asks the hard, great questions. The question he brought up earlier about Caleb Williams, probably the best question of the season, because it made Caleb Williams not give a fluff answer. And it was a real question. So good stuff from Herb Howard as always. All right. I want to place Jalen Johnson on the other side. What did he say when he was hanging out with Spiegel and Holmes? I'll play that for you after this. Don't go anywhere. It's Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score.
I look at it no differently. I hated that talk then about the draft pick because none of us in here are playing for draft picks. I mean, maybe that was something. I mean, that's something you have to ask management. I don't know. But, like, that's not anything that the players in the locker room care about. So it's equally just as hard. It's just, I think for me, when you do it over and over again, that's where it kind of takes the toll mentally. And those are the things that you got to fight through. And You just got to be able to persevere through. But I didn't have that mindset 2 years ago of, oh, we're doing this for a draft pick. That's not what my mindset was, for sure.
Cole Kmet talking right there, not doing it for draft picks. But if you talk to Clay Harbor, 9-year NFL vet, he is with me on my Bears podcast with Marshall Harris as well. Believe in Bears. We got a new episode coming out tomorrow, by the way. But Clay Harbor said, no, you're not playing for draft picks, but you are playing to stay injury free. And if you're watching some of the Bears players, they are making business decisions out there, because Clay's like, the last thing you want to do in a meaningless season, especially when there's uncertainty surrounding your job, is to get hurt at the end of it. I want to play a clip from Jalen Johnson. He's talking a lot in the locker room, and obviously gets the opportunity to talk with Spiegel and Holmes every Monday, 5 p.m. It's must-listen-to radio. He talked about, he doesn't buy into hope, talking about execution, and of course he feels that he himself is playing at a high level, so he thinks that his team and his wins should mirror that. And so you could tell Jalen, he's been about his business. But he talked to Spiegel and Holmes specifically about the stability of the Chicago Bears during his tenure with the team.
We've had a lot of instability throughout this building in the past 5 years that I've been here. I mean, we're on 2 GMs, 3 head coaches. I can't count how many offensive coordinators, how many defensive coordinators. So, I mean, it's hard to just put a point on it. We've had so many guys come in and out the building, out the locker room. So, I mean, I know the better teams in the league are more of the consistent teams that have that stability, that have a culture built and set. So, I mean, again, for us, for myself, just trying to find a way to build that culture, build a winning locker room the best way I can. And at the end of the day, it takes everybody. Players got to execute. Coaches got to put guys in positions. Front office got to bring the right people in the building. So, I mean, everybody has to be better, including myself. I got to be better. I got to find ways to spark the defense, to make plays, get the ball out, whatever it may be. So, I mean, everybody has room for improvement.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see Jalen Johnson's personality over the next season or two. Right, especially if the Bears continue to be unstable, as he put it. All right, one person who is certainly stable, especially with her gambling picks, it is Kate Constable, my co-host on The Better Angle. She drives the whole thing, does a fantastic job, but one thing she knows for sure is her stuff. We do this bet at the end of every show, and Kate started the season 6-0, hot. Then she lost her two, then went 1-1, so... if you want to pay attention to some picks, Kate's going to give you some gems on the other side. We're going to talk about college football playoffs. We'll also talk about maybe some other bets you might want to play some money on heading into tonight, if you're trying to gamble tonight, or maybe in the next couple of days. Kate Constable joins us next right here on 670 The Score.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
You hear the music, you know what it is. It's Gabe Ramirez here on 670 The Score, bringing in my other half on Saturdays. No, I'm not talking about my wife. I'm talking about Kate Constable, host of The Better Angle on the BetQL Network. You can listen to us Saturdays, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, but we're all over the country, and you can listen to us on the Odyssey app as well. And she joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Kate, what it is, my friend? How are you doing?
Hey, Gabe, I'm good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Has your Final Four changed since Saturday when we were watching our championship Saturday games together?
For the college football playoffs?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to think. I'm all over the place. No, my Final Four is pretty much, well, actually with the seeding, Oregon got absolutely screwed with the seeding. How are you 13-0? You're the number one team in the country, and you have to go through potentially Ohio State, maybe Texas. Tennessee's also an option too, but I think the Buckeyes will win. I feel bad for Oregon. Now, if they end up running the table and win it at all, it's going to be worth it. But they got themselves just a terrible, terrible draw here. So yeah, I'm still with Oregon, Oregon, Texas. Who else do I have? Notre Dame and Penn State. Those are my four.
You and I are on opposite ends here.
Are we? Good. I like that.
Yeah, I know. I have Ohio State beating the okay. O. I have them beating okay. the O, so they're my Final Four. I do have Texas there as well. I have SMU in my Final Four. And I have Georgia. Yeah. I think SMU, we've been watching SMU put up so many points this year. I just think a lot of teams are going to get a little tight. And at the end, when it matters, I think SMU can get it done. I certainly feel like they can give Penn State a run for their money, a team that struggles. Boise State, I don't know. I think they'll just handle them. And then, yes, I think they'll make the Final Four. All right, here, tell me this. What if somebody is trying to win some money, right, and looking at a dog that they can bet in the first round of this college football playoff, who's a dog that you think can pull off an upset and win some people some money?
Okay, so I don't totally disagree with you with the SMU. I like Penn State to win that game, but SMU covering the – it's up to 8.5. That's my favorite play of the first round because you're right. SMU's offense, averaging almost 37 points per game, they are phenomenal in generating explosive plays, and I think that's what you need. So I'm not going to pick SMU to win outright as a dog, but I will pick them to cover. It's Tennessee and Ohio State so interesting. It all comes down to how Ohio State's going to come out in this one because they're coming off that terrible loss to Michigan. Are they going to be tight? Are they going to be stiff coming into this game? Are they going to be worried about every little mistake that they make? Because if that's the case, Tennessee is playing with house money, and they can capitalize. Plus, I almost think it's not necessarily a detriment to Ohio State, but how are the Ohio State fans going to react if they do get down early? Are they going to start to boo? It just is an awkward kind of situation for the Buckeyes to be in. Now, they're the more talented team between the two by far, but just the situation that they're in of coming off that terrible loss, Ryan Day coaching for his job pretty much right now.
And literally for his job, Kay. If he loses this game,
he is fired immediately.
Immediately after the game.
They're not even going to let him do the next morning press conference and then fire him 2 hours later. Like, they're just going to let him go.
Low blow, but it's true. I can see if he loses, for sure he's out of there. And he'll be coaching. Let me see. Where will he be coaching next year?
Maybe Belichick will hire him as an assistant. Offensive coordinator?
Well, I thought he's going to do Matt Patricia, right? Is that what it's going to say? Is that what's going to go down over there? Yeah, he's just this incestuous thing that's going on. Wasn't that surprising, though?
Very surprising.
Quickly went over to UNC and followed Mac Brown and said, I can do something big over here.
So I have a theory, Gabe. My theory, because we talk about theory a lot on Saturdays has nothing to do with betting. But I have a theory that Bill Belichick is taking the UNC job. He's bringing his son over. And then if something becomes available in the NFL this season, maybe the Jets in the offseason, there's ways he can get out of that contract. I mean, I know it probably sounds crazy, but he's not going to give up a potential opportunity to coach in the NFL again, to coach at UNC. So my theory is he's taking this job. He's going to act like he really wants it, and maybe he really does. But if there becomes a NFL coaching job, he's going to find a loophole in that contract. But his son is still going to be at UNC because he wanted to pass the reins over to his son after. So that's my whole theory in this. It may be crazy. It may not be doable at all. I don't know the ins and outs of that contract. But people have gotten out of contracts before. And if there's anyone that can do it, it's probably Bill Belichick.
Yeah, certainly that. All right, Kay. I know you get. Do you have any bets online for tonight? Like, you know, anything?
I had Carl Anthony Towns over 2.5 threes, and he finished with 2. I also the Knicks tonight, so I'm 0-2 for the night this evening. Oh. Not a great thing to come on the radio and give out picks when I've been losing.
No, this is the moment that you do give out a pick because the fact of the matter is, no one you're not going to go 0 for the night. You know,
no,
statistically,
it's the buy low spot.
Yeah, well, all right. Golden State and the Houston Rockets are playing tonight. The Rockets have been playing out of their mind this year, but some would say so have the Golden State Warriors playing in the NBA Cup. I'm glued to. I'm watching every game because they're playing hard from the first quarter on. It's like a playoff game. Any bets that you're looking at in this one, maybe just a nice little money line, maybe over-under, maybe a player prop, anything you can see in this game, Kate, that we might be able to look into?
I like the Rockets in this one. I like them to win straight up. I know they're favored by 3.5, so that line's moved quite a bit throughout the afternoon. But if you could jump in on a live line, because that game's starting like any minute, take the Rockets live, or if you can get them at a predator price. The Warriors have absolutely dominated Houston in this series lately, and they've won 2 already this season. It's hard to win 3 straight in a row in the same season and in the same, month. And this Rockets team, they're young, they're hungry, their defense is phenomenal, and their offense is great at home. So they play better at home than they do on the road. The Warriors, as good as they've been, I just think that this is a Rockets team that has it going on both sides of the ball right now. And this money in the NBA Cup, if you win it, probably means a whole lot more to some of those players than it does to Draymond Green and Steph Curry and the likes of those guys. So that, I'm rocking with the Rockets tonight.
That right there is enough for me to lay the money down, Kate. The fact that the Houston Rockets have a bunch of young guys and an extra $100K, I know they're looking at that. Draymond Green probably spent that designing his half bathroom on his third floor or something like that. Not quite.
He spends it on all his fines.
Yeah, it's nothing going on like that. All right, Kate, let the people know where they can listen to us Saturday so they can win some more money.
Yeah, Saturdays from 3 to 6 Central Time. You can listen to me and Gabe on the BetQL Network on 670 The Score this weekend as well. And then you can also catch me on Sunday mornings, 7 to 10 a.m. Central on the BetQL Network, BetMGM Game Day, where we break down every game on the NFL slate, go through picks for each game, and give out a ton of bets.
Great stuff, Kate. Appreciate you jumping on to wrap up the show, because I'm about to get up out of here. I got to get to the crib. All right. Thanks for hanging. I'll talk to you soon, all right?
Sounds good. Thanks, Gabe.
Kate Constable, make sure you follow her on social media. She is the goods when it comes to gambling, and you got to lock her in, man. I'm telling you, she does the Sunday show here on 670 The Score before the guys get on for the pregame show, and then, of course, hanging out with me on Saturdays on the BetQL Network. Woo! What a fast show. It went by faster than I thought, Tyler. This is I thought to myself, man, 6 to 9 solo. I've been doing all these group shows lately, like by myself. I don't even like myself now. I've been hating myself lately.
No, this was a great show. And like you said, it did kind of fly by.
It flew by.
Hey, time flies when you're having fun, buddy.
That's what they say. And time was flying today, man. I built my daughter's, both of them, their bunk bed today. And it was a solo. It was a two-person job, but I did it by myself. My back is killing me.
Oh, yeah, I bet, dude.
Killing me. But I built it. Girls are sleeping in it right now. Shout out to those that had a bunk bed back in the day. I did with my brother. Those are special times. A lot of memories in the bunk beds out there. Oh, geez. All right. Want to thank my guests today. And we had a plenty. Sam Monson from the 33rd team. Ryan McGuffey. Right from right here inside the clubhouse. You can catch him on Saturdays. I want to thank Herb Howard and, of course, Kate Constable for jumping. I want to thank my producer today, Tyler Buterbaugh.
Tyler Buterbaugh for three. Count it. And a foul on the Buterbaugh.
And that was like 6 feet behind the three-point line, too. That's what was wild about that. All right, my people. What's today? Wednesday? I'll be on CHSN on Friday. I will be on the BetQL Network on Saturday. I'll be filling in next week for David Hall on The Score. You know how it is, guys. Everywhere, all the time. Mi gente, that means my people. Hasta la próxima, that means until next time. I am Gabe Ramirez, and this is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Where do you go from here, Aaron?
Home.